fastings, and when you go through fastings, you're almost halfway gone through, because the rest of half is remaining, and you can go through other ibadat. Inshallah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa salam alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Ammar in the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the Holocaust on Palestinians in Gaza continues by the Zionist regime. There will be no ceasefire for the beginning of the month of Ramadan, and there seems to be no pressure on the Zionist regime. United States and its cohorts have not only given the Zionist entity the green light to continue its genocide, but these countries are complicit. Inflicting as much pain and suffering as possible seems to be the goal of the Zionists and their Western backers. We're going to take a look at what happened today and what has happened for the last 5.5 months on this program. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Harley Schlanger, spokesman, International Schiller Institute out of Germany. And John Phoenix, journalist and international relations expert out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Well, Harley, let me start it off with you. Did you expect this genocide to still be going on 5.5 months later?
Well, I think anyone who's listened to Joe Biden can realize that whatever he says about being more humane and stopping the killing of civilians, it means nothing. Because if the United States wanted to stop the killing, they could very quickly by cutting off the money and cutting off the weapons and cutting off the diplomatic cover. So regardless of the fact that Biden said he wanted a ceasefire by Ramadan, that the U.S. is putting out these messages, Blinken travels there, Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, all of them are saying that this is unacceptable. They know that that's not going to stop Netanyahu. And the problem is that the U.S. is giving, as you said, a green light to the Zionist regime, the Netanyahu regime, to slaughter Palestinians. Now, the other aspect of this is, what about Europe? What about the European allies, the NATO allies of the United States? There have been a few voices raised, but on the whole, the Europeans remain fully in the camp of Netanyahu. Obviously, many of them believe that the solution to the problem in the region is to drive the Palestinians out of Palestine. They won't say it, but that's what they're letting Netanyahu do. And so I'm not surprised that it's continued. I'm horrified that it is. My organization is working to do everything we can to build a movement to stop it. But so far, the Biden regime is totally committed to defending Netanyahu, despite his statements today on MSNBC that he's upset with Netanyahu.
Yeah, stay with me on that. I'm going to get to that a little bit later in the program. Now, John, did you expect that a ceasefire would be in place by the month of Ramadan?
Well, I believe that the issue of ceasefire before Ramadan, it was just lip service by Biden. I believe that they know the Ramadan is starting tomorrow. And the Israelis, for several times, refused after meeting with the Qatari mediators and the Egyptian mediators. They refused any proposal proposed by Hamas, which is a simple proposal, is that the, well, obviously, Israel had to draw from Gaza. A ceasefire, you know, will be at the same time. And then the first week, they will start, obviously, going through exchange of prisoners. And then from there, they take it for the second phase, which is the Israelis will have to be out of Gaza completely. Now, they rejected that. Okay, they, because they wanted to give the Palestinians a break in Ramadan, so after Ramadan they'd be ready to come back and slaughter them. They are refusing a permanent ceasefire. They wanted a ceasefire only for Ramadan. This is not acceptable for the Palestinians.
Right.
So that's why the proposal of having a ceasefire before Ramadan or for Ramadan is failed.
Right. What about that, Harley? It's actually quite mind-boggling that it is proposed, and we saw it earlier, there is a temporary ceasefire. We have a pause, and then we get back to the genocide. I mean, it is so mind-boggling, so dystopian just to think about this being even a possibility that they were bringing this up.
Well, that just shows the hypocrisy. I mean, the idea that you're going to stop firing for a little bit of time to get the hostages back, then you're going to go back in and continue the mass murder. The fact that no one's calling that out shows you the extent to which the West has lost all semblance of morality. Now, I just was at a briefing this afternoon at the South African embassy in Berlin, and what they said is they're going to continue to go to the International Court of Justice with one complaint after another to try and get some motion on this. But you look at what this means, even if the International Court of Justice rules that this is genocide and it should stop, it goes to the United Nations. And the U.S. continues to veto even a ceasefire resolution at the U.N. So when the U.S. says they want a ceasefire, I ask, well, what's the evidence that they really do? There's no evidence that they do. Right. They're comfortable with the destruction of the Palestinian population. And, of course, this goes back to why it is that they supported Netanyahu's efforts to break apart the unity of the Palestinians, why Netanyahu for a period of time was funding Hamas, why the Israelis were so-called caught off guard on October 7th. This is what Israel has intended to do. The ethnic cleansing has not stopped from 1948 to the present.
Okay, well, John, from a military perspective, the Zionist regime really has not been successful in Gaza. Are you surprised at the way the Palestinian resistance has inflicted harm, though, on the Zionist military?
I didn't think so, because this is not the first war, actually. The only difference between this war and previous war, this is the genocide, where they now they change the tactic of attacking civilians, bombing schools and hospitals. They know if they went, obviously, for a one-to-one fight with Hamas, they will not really be able to succeed. They tried Hamas several times before, and they failed. The only difference now is they are not attacking Hamas per se. They are attacking the civilians and hospitals and the schools. You know, it is really a barbaric war, not a war, a barbaric genocide against the Palestinian civilians. So I'm not surprised that the Palestinians will fight to the last second, the last drop of blood to defend their own land.
Right, of course. Well, Harley, why is the U.S. playing this game as if it wants to help the Palestinians and get aid to them, but at the same time it doesn't actually stop the genocide and it actually helps with it?
Well, let me give you a slightly broader perspective where this fits, which is that we've just seen motion with the so-called BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, expanding to include a number of nations in the region, including the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Iran. Now, the importance of that is that the United States, the military-industrial complex that controls the United States, is trying to destroy the potential for a new financial system. And you see that in terms of the attacks on Russia, the attempt to destroy Russia. And now we see the attempt to create a wider regional war. For what purpose? To maintain the U.S. sole superpower status, with Israel as an enforcer agent of that. My view and our view is that Israel is being used as a tool by the Anglo-American networks to maintain the unipolar order. And so, and from that standpoint, Biden, Blinken, Sullivan, they don't care one bit for the murder of Palestinian children. We saw that with Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, who praised the killing of 500,000 Iraqi children by sanctions, saying that it was worth it to get rid of Saddam Hussein. So this is the bloodthirsty mentality of the clique that controls the government in the United States and the United Kingdom. And that's why they keep vetoing these resolutions, and they cry crocodile tears about the children who are dying as they give more weapons to the Israelis to kill them.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, John, U.S. President Joe Biden on American Network on Saturday said that there is a red line for the Israeli regime in Netanyahu. Later on in the same program, he said there is no red line for the regime. What do you make of this?
I mean, you have to keep in mind one thing, that the players here, the person who controls the whole scene, is not Joe Biden. It's the Zionist lobby in Washington. Obviously, Joe Biden throw this out as obviously election year now, and he tried to distance himself from the genocide by saying, "Look, well, we're not going to allow the Israelis attacking Rafah." Well, nearly half of Gaza Strip in the city of Rafah. They're still attacking Rafah, on the edges of Rafah. Yesterday, they killed 30 people. What you mean, it's okay to slaughter other people in Khan Yunis, Bereish camp, 8 refugee camps, they're being slaughtered daily and left to starve to death. Yet he's just worried about Rafah. You know, the issue of the aid, which is, as you mentioned earlier, they are quick enough to bomb the Hodeida in Yemen, Hodeida Airport. They can bomb anywhere, but they cannot drop aids to the Palestinians. Most of the aids was dropped by the Jordanians in the sea, where the Palestinians had to go to the sea to fish the aid, and the Zionist Navy there, killing them on the water. So it's really hypocrisy of the Biden by actually saying, we have a red line. He cannot cross the red line in Rafah, but we don't have a red line because we cannot really abandon Israel. Well, he's sending daily supply of military equipment to Israel to kill Palestinians. So why is Rafah only? Nearly 780,000 Palestinians in Rafah. Why is Rafah only where there's 750,000 in the central of Gaza and in north of Gaza? They left there to starve to death.
Well, Harley, is the Zionist regime and the regime in Washington basically one and the same?
Well, let me take a step back and make a point that I think is important. The American people are starting to turn against this war. They're seeing the footage, the social media coverage, and we saw the results of even the Democratic Party rebelling against Biden in the Super Tuesday primaries. It's not enough, but it indicates that there are people in the United States who don't agree with this policy. And you see internationally, when the South Africans brought this motion to the International Court of Justice, 55 nations, including the Organization of Islamic Countries, the African Union, and others, testified against Israel, against the Zionists, as carrying out a genocide policy. So there's opposition to it, but not inside the U.S. military-industrial complex. They are totally tied in with the same banks and financial institutions that run Israel. And, you know, the question that some people have is the Zionist lobby running the United States. Well, the Zionist lobby is essentially the corporate cartels of banks and defense sector companies and others that want war. They don't care if it's in Ukraine or Israel. They've done their damnedest over the years to try and portray every Palestinian as a terrorist to justify the attack on Palestine. And so most Americans don't know the story of the colonial occupation of Palestine going back beyond 1948 to the whole Balfour Declaration and so on.
Right.
So as a result, the American people let Biden lie and let him get away with it, although, as I said, there is a resistance building to that.
Well, John, since the U.S. and Israeli policy seems to be so intertwined, excuse me, does it mean that both entities can't be charged with war crimes and genocide?
Well, yes, those who are aiding the genocide under the international law, they should be charged because they are part of the genocide. Yet, physically, they are not, obviously, involved. But we do also aware that there is some military involvement by the American Marines in the beginning. Those who listen to a lot of the locals in Khan Yunis, he was actually talking to some of the soldiers who did say we are from USA, spoke to them in English. So the United States cannot just, obviously, in the end say we have nothing to do with us. They're aiding the Zionist regime, they're supplying them with their weapons, and also they're supplying them with all footages, which is telling them where is the movement of Hamas, if there is any movement. They have their own satellite there. So they are actually practically part of that genocide. But the problem is, whatever happened in the International Court or United Nations, there is no mechanism to force Israel or to punish Israel. You know, they are above the law. And when any as your guest said earlier, any time any resolution goes to the United States, it doesn't matter how many countries will vote for it, one vote, one veto, which is the United States. So that's what they, three times so far, they veto the ceasefire.
Right.
Just to stop the killing. It's not even involving the Israelis withdrawn from Gaza and go back to the 7th of October, obviously. They wanted actually to keep the slaughter by actually being an obstacle by stopping the slaughter of the civilians.
Well, Harley, do you think the U.S.'s proposed setup of a port off of Gaza is a ruse, as many analysts are saying, to basically empty Gaza of Palestinians and to take control of the Strip and its natural resources?
Well, I think that's a cruel hoax. The idea that you're going to put a pier out into the ocean and deliver some food. You know, the U.S. made a big deal out of dropping 38,000 meals ready to eat. 38,000 for 1.5 million starving people? You know, I think if it weren't so deadly, it would be, people would be laughing at this. But I want to go back to this question of the complicity of the United States, because the Genocide Convention of 1947-48 said that supplying weapons and support to a nation committing genocide means the nation supplying the aid and the money and the weapons is also complicit. And so under international law, if there really was a rules-based order, which Blinken keeps talking about, the United States should be brought on charges of genocide along with Israel. And the fact that it hasn't been shows the extent to which nations are afraid to turn against the unipolar order. Because the U.S., look, there's the 7th Fleet, or the, whatever the 6th Fleet is in the Mediterranean. The U.S. has proven its willingness to conduct killing in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Libya, in Syria, with the support of the terrorists there. So You know, I think the problem is there's got to be a reaction in the United States and Europe. And it's important what you're doing to get the story out, because your news does get covered in the United States. They try to silence it, but the more the truth gets out, the more chance we have that we can turn this around.
Yeah, they definitely try to silence this network many times. But go ahead, John, you want to say something?
Don't forget, in the beginning of the genocide, the USA sent their military ship bordering the Lebanese shores and sent, obviously, threatening messages through the Lebanese government to Hezbollah not to involve. Not only they are supplying weapons, they vetoing any resolution to condemn the Zionist entity in the United Nations. They physically, actually, and they are actually on the sea, telling Hezbollah, if you involve, we had to involve to protect Israel. So as the gentleman just mentioned, aiding and financing is part of that. But as I said earlier, there is no mechanism to force United States or Israel. In 1979, the American bombed the harbor in Nicaragua. And international law obviously decided that the American under Reagan should rebuild the harbor. So we've been waiting 45 years now. Nothing happened. You need to have enforcement to make things happen, not only spending time condemning this and condemning that and nothing happened. Palestinians after South African complained to the court, they still killed. That war never stopped. Hospitals still being bombed. Schools still being bombed. So there is no mechanism to stop that unless the Palestinians and the other neighboring resistance intensify their resistance to the Zionist entity, and then that will make a big difference. A little move by Yemen, you know, a little poor country, to make a big difference. Hezbollah keeping the north area of Resi busy. We need Iraq and Syria. And the only way, counting on United States government, you know, is not going to make any difference.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with us on this spotlight. Harley Schenker out of Germany, spokesman for International Schiller Institute. John Phoenix out of London, journalist and international relations expert. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, hoping to see you right here next time. Goodbye.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how are we purified in the holy month of Ramadan? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So dear friends, it is such an honor to be here. Holy month of Ramadan. What a beautiful month indeed. Yes, it is a little bit difficult, and there are some trials and hardships that come along with the holy month of Ramadan, but by the grace of Allah, it is a month which is the holiest of months. It is the most beautiful of months. It is the month in which the Holy Quran has been revealed. It is the month in which we find the nights of Qadr, the Laylatul Qadr, these nights of Qadr, of course, of destiny, of power, of fate. This is such a beautiful month to be witnessing in our lives. So we're talking about how we are purified in the holy month of Ramadan. Now, of course, these are discussions which, you know, they can last hours, but we try our best to kind of condense them as much as we can with the help and the grace of the Almighty Allah. So how does the holy month of Ramadan purify us? And one thing that we want to keep in mind, because we're always talking about achieving that pure and blessed Islamic lifestyle, is that all of the things that we learn in the holy month of Ramadan, or that we do in the holy month of Ramadan, are things which we should continue and at least try our best to implement in our Islamic lifestyle in the months that are non-holy month of Ramadan, if you will. So in the rest of our life, we should be able to inculcate these things that we learn in the holy month of Ramadan into our Islamic lifestyle and really make it a part of our Islamic lifestyle.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we're talking about how the holy month of Ramadan purifies us. Again, this is a very, extensive subject. It's not something that you can easily cover in a few minutes. But primarily, if we go to the core and the essence, I guess there are two things. Really, it's really one thing. So let's just kind of start with the one thing and then explain how it's two things. So the one thing is that it establishes and brings us closer to the Almighty Allah. So this is primarily how it purifies us. The ultimate end result is that we become closer to the Almighty Allah. But something under this is this idea that because we stop eating and drinking, what that does is that it separates us from the materialistic aspect of our own selves and of the world. So when we disconnect from the material aspect of ourselves and the material aspect of the world, then clearly the result is what we just spoke about, which was this stronger spiritual, metaphysical connection with the Almighty Allah. Now, of course, the only way that you can connect with Allah is if you disconnect with everything that is not Allah. Now, that is, I guess, the very essence of what we're talking about. Of course, the discussion is open to many other different things, but this is how we are purified in the holy month of Ramadan, because we end up cutting ourselves off from these very base and material aspects of ourself, so that our spiritual aspect can become strengthened and become powerful and establish a very beautiful connection with the Almighty Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
an annual meeting of Quran reciters and memorizers with the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
Every year on the first day of the holy month of Ramadan, leader of the Islamic Revolution receives top reciters of the Holy Quran to stress the importance of this very holy book in the lives of Muslims.
In the meeting, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei described the recitation of the Quran as a sacred art, while underlining that the primary objective of this very valuable skill should be to convey the meaning and message of the Quran to the public and society and create the ground for contemplation of the Holy Scripture. Elsewhere in his speech, Ayatollah Khamenei expressed his satisfaction with the abundant number of young Quran reciters in the country, viewing their increase as a blessing of the Islamic Revolution. Meanwhile, referring to the crimes committed by the Zionist regime in Gaza, the leader pointed out that the peak of resilience that is being witnessed in Gaza presently stems from a profound familiarity with and adherence to the teachings of the Quran. Before the meeting, young and experienced reciters and memorizers were very much excited to listen and take a glimpse of the leader.
I am very much excited to recite some verses of the Holy Quran in the presence of the leader, but this is a great opportunity for me to see the leader.
This is the third time I have the honor of attending such a great event. Today I am going to have supplications to recite about the holy month of Ramadan.
Other reciters were worried about the people of Gaza, who are observing the holy month of Ramadan amid the Israeli bombing and shelling campaign.
The month of Ramadan is the month of mercy and blessing. I do believe that during this month, the Zionist regime will face a big defeat.
At the end of the ceremony, the Quran reciters and memorizers held congregational prayers led by the leader of the Islamic Revolution and broke their fast together. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iran, Russia, and China have conducted the main phase of a joint naval drill dubbed Maritime Security Belt 2024. After arriving at the northern part of the Indian Ocean, the vessels of the three countries practiced different operations. The joint drills took place in 17,000 square kilometers of water in a region that is an internationally crucial hub for energy and trade traffic. The first phase of the naval drills included live firing at designated surface targets in the Sea of Oman. Various vessels and fast attack crafts from the IRGC were also involved in the exercise. The vessels were armed with the state-of-the-art homegrown advanced weapons. The next phase included the PhotoX exercise and offensive formations. The helicopters of the Islamic Republic of Iran Navy and the IRGC monitored the region in all stages of the exercise. Iran's Navy commander hailed the exercise as a successful endeavor to improve maritime cooperation of the contributing countries. The commander also said that Iran expects the drills to expand in the future.
This year, as we expected, regarding the types of vessels participating in the exercise, both China and Russia have increased the variety as well as tonnage of the vessels. So hopefully, we expect more countries to join the drills in the future, especially regional states.
Admiral Irani also stated that regional nations have the capacity to confront piracy and terrorism by enhancing cooperation. The exercises are the latest in joint drills by Iran, China, and Russia. Iran says regional countries are most welcome to take part in the drills that are going to take place in the future. The Islamic Republic has time and again stressed that regional countries are the ones that are truly in charge of establishing security in the region. Mahdi Abbasian, Konarak.
On the first day of the holy month of Ramadan in Nigeria, the Islamic movement held a rally through the streets of the capital, Abuja, in a peaceful protest against the massacre of innocent civilians in Gaza. The protest march took the demonstrators to the gate of the United States Embassy, where they sat down and submitted a letter of protest condemning the Israeli genocide in Gaza and U.S. involvement in the killing of innocent Palestinians.
America is one of the major party in this
killing of innocent female and children in Gaza. Since October 7th to date, they have killed more than 31,000 innocent people, majorly female and children in Gaza.
The demonstrators blame the United States and British governments for using their influence to block a UN resolution calling for a ceasefire. They said every decent government has condemned the Israeli terror attacks on the Palestinians, but the U.S. government has continued to support the mass murder of innocent Palestinians.
They are killing female and children. They are imposing starvation on innocent female and children. Babies have been seen under rubble, crying inside blood. We see a lot of fathers carrying a lifeless body of their children killed by Israelis. Anybody that has concern for humanity should come out today on the street and show his solidarity with Palestinians.
The demonstrators burned the U.S. and Israeli flags as they slammed Tel Aviv's regime impunity and the silence of the international community. Many Muslims in Nigeria believe that Israel's continuous killing of Palestinians in Gaza on the eve of the holy month of Ramadan is a clear proof of the regime's disrespect for Islamic sanctities. The protesters here are urging world leaders to pressure Israel to end the massacre in Gaza. Tanjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
Britons treat their National Health Service, better known as the NHS, with an almost religious reverence.
We grow up using the NHS from the cradle to the grave, free at the point of use, and that has tremendous significance for our lives.
But today, this eternal source of national pride is under increased scrutiny, with new figures showing more than 120,000 people died last year in England alone from delays in life-saving treatment. The NHS is a state-funded healthcare system founded in 1948. Back then, it cost around $20 billion in today's money to run. Last year, the government spent more than $181 billion. Despite that, more than 7 million people are now on the waiting list in England alone. That's nearly 12% of the population having to wait at least 52 weeks for a health consultation.
Our politicians aren't really serving the public interest. They are serving a neoliberal agenda, which is to transfer the country's natural assets and wealth to overseas corporations like United Health of America and other big multinationals.
The government has promised to cut the long queues, but has made little progress. The situation is no better in the rest of the kingdom. In Scotland and Northern Ireland, 1 in 80 people, and in Wales, 1 in 20 are having to wait more than a year for treatment. There's also the energy costs and inflation that has reduced the value of the NHS budget, meaning it now has to do more with significantly less. Add to the mix a shortage of staff, which means more pressure on exhausted employees.
We've had more than a decade of defunding since the financial crash. This has led to a real terms wage cut for staff. The whole population, the health needs have gone up. We have trouble keeping hold of staff, and we've also lost significant capacity with the NHS through privatization. So we don't have enough beds, we don't have enough staff, and the staff we do have are being treated appallingly.
The health service is also coping with an aging population. A large number of people now live with chronic conditions like heart disease and diabetes. The COVID-19 pandemic severely tested the NHS, with its aftermath still posing serious challenges. Health officials and experts warn for the UK's National Health Service to survive, the next government should declare it a national emergency. Saipur is at London.
India says it will enact the Citizenship Amendment Act that provides fast-track naturalization for multiple religious groups who fled to India from Afghanistan, Bangladesh and Pakistan before 2014. The law, however, excludes Muslims from those countries. Back in 2019, law's approval sparked deadly protests across the country and was halted since. The Muslim minority in India fears the government is using this law and other similar laws to widen crackdown on them.
India introduced this bill in 2016 with the aim of granting citizenship to what it calls a persecuted section of refugees. However, the bill has become one of the most controversial issues across the country since it excludes Muslims from availing citizenship. Critics accuse the ruling BJP of targeting a particular community on the basis of faith, which experts call unconstitutional.
Commentators also question the exclusion of persecuted religious minorities from other regions such as Tibet, Sri Lanka and Myanmar. India's Interior Ministry has said in a statement, those eligible can now apply online for Indian citizenship. The issue has been one of the key pledges of Indian Prime Minister since assuming office in 2014. The new legislation makes changes to more than six decades old Indian citizenship law.
It's unfortunate for us that we are not part of this new law, despite the fact we have faced worse persecution any community has faced so far. We have still hope one day India will accept us on the ground of humanity.
Opposition political parties have accused the ruling party of influencing the elections, saying the move is to polarize the voters, considering its timing. More than 200 petitions challenging the law are still pending before the court of law.
We thank India they provide us shelter. It's an act of kindness, but we urge this country not to abandon us, knowing the fact we have seen deadly violence and persecution.
India, home to roughly 200 million Muslims, have recently seen targeted attacks and vicious hate campaigns. Critics accuse the ruling party of mixing religion with politics, resonating with India's majority. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Russia Navy warship, and China Navy warship. This is Iranian Navy warship 235, Italian Channel 16. Do you read me? Over.
The Maritime Security Belt 2024 has officially kicked off with Russian and Chinese vessels entering Iran's territorial waters south of the country on Tuesday. The naval and airborne units of Iran's army and the IRGC, along with their Chinese and Russian counterparts, will participate in various operations during this exercise. Naval delegations from Azerbaijan, Pakistan, Kazakhstan, Oman and South Africa have also taken part as observer states. At the first stage of the drill, the naval officers of the three countries as well as the observer states reviewed different phases of the exercise on maps and held tactical briefings. Later, the naval commanders of Iran, Russia and China held a joint presser. The Iranian Navy's deputy commander said the main aim of the joint exercise is to help safeguard security in the northern part of the Indian Ocean.
Upholding peace and security in the north of Indian Ocean and having a specialized cooperation in combating piracy and terrorism in our region are among the main goals of this exercise. We are constantly working to improve this cooperation.
Meanwhile, Chinese and Russian Navy commanders said the joint exercise further demonstrates the preparedness of the participating countries to maintain security while also deepening their practical cooperation. 2024 is the fifth consecutive year that the Islamic Republic of Iran's Navy is hosting countries participating in the Maritime Security Belt drills in the northern Indian Ocean region.
This year's naval drills have kicked off under the motto Together for Peace and Security, with participating countries highlighting the importance of jointly safeguarding regional security. Atiyah Bosyan, Konarak.
This is not the first time Palestinian people are spending Ramadan under Israeli aggression. In 2014, the Israeli regime also waged a destructive war on Gaza during the holy month. However, the current genocidal war is unprecedented in terms of its colossal casualties. Many Palestinians have become orphans and widows and lost their children. The memory of their loved ones will stay with them in Ramadan.
The life here is so difficult. The holy month of Ramadan is around the corner and we are still displaced from our homes and our families are torn apart. We have nothing to eat for iftar. I'm originally from Gaza. I've lost 37 members of my family. They were so close to my heart. Every time I remember them, my gut is wrenched and I become so sad and furious.
With markets destroyed and goods scarce, Gazans don't know where their iftar meals will come from, which means more suffering and agony. The vast majority of the people live in small tents amid the starvation that has already claimed the lives of several Palestinian children.
The situation in Gaza is very difficult. There is no food. The people are struggling to find anything to eat with flour scarce. Here in the south, they queue in long lines for food. Even those who attempt to get anything from the aid trucks are putting their lives at risk as Israeli soldiers open fire on them. I don't know what we're going to do in Ramadan.
Palestinians' catastrophe doesn't stop with the loss of their relatives. It is deepened by the full-scale destruction that has become palpable in every corner of Gaza, including mosques, which means they won't be able to say their prayers and worships as usual. Even if their mosques hadn't been destroyed, it would still be impossible for them to perform their prayers under the incessant Israeli bombardments.
The humanitarian conditions are completely disastrous. The people were displaced from several parts of Gaza, including the northern and central areas of the Strip. It is literally catastrophic. There is no source of income or food, and the people are completely relying on the small amounts of donation provided by a limited numbers of charity institutions. In addition to that, mosques have been completely destroyed by Israeli warplanes and we will never be able to pray in them.
While some aid has been trickling into Gaza, it's minuscule compared to the needs of the Palestinians. With Ramadan arriving, more assistance cannot come soon enough for them.
As the whole Muslim nation welcomes Ramadan, Palestinians are wondering why they have been abandoned by many Muslim leaders to face the Israeli campaign of death and starvation. To Abu Musabbih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
The Iranian National Oil and Gas Company says that this is the most strategic project in the history of Iran's oil and gas industry and its long-sought empowerment of domestic entities. Under this project, 90 trillion cubic feet of gas and 2 billion barrels of gas condensates will be available for use. Top Iranian companies Petropars, Oil Industries Engineering and Construction, Khatam al-Anbiya Construction Headquarters, Mapna Group, and a consulting company are the contractors of the mega project.
In the subject matter of the development and increase of capacities of the gas and oil refineries, we witnessed the second phase of Abadan refinery with the capacity of 210,000 barrels, which helped the production and supply of gas in the country. In the 14th phase of the South Pars refineries, 50 million cubic feet of gas is produced per day, which again adds to the capacity of gas production in the country.
The massive project has created an opportunity to kickstart economic prosperity and employment in the face of unilateral Western sanctions. This has also allowed Iranian producers and companies to engage greatly in the economic growth and industrial development of the country and neutralize the sanctions.
Today, all Iranian people should witness the fact that the surrounding nations trust the Iranian National Oil Company and the relative competent companies and contractors and do rely on them, because they know well that the South Pass was built by Iranian companies, and the day that they thought that it was impossible to do so without the help and presence of foreigners, that exact day was the day that South Pass became what it is today.
While sanctions have forced the governing bodies to change their attitude towards domestic companies and entrust them with tasks, it should be noted that Iranian producers are not perennial supporters of sanctions. Rather, they would like to interact and acquire world-class technologies from foreign companies to empower themselves.
With contracts for developing oil and gas fields signed and projects for boosting pressure in South Pars gas field being started, Iran is experiencing yet another success in the mega gas project to exploit the immense gas field. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
This is Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. I'm Asma. Once more, I have the honor to be at your service. And there again, we have two very dear guests, Sister Bita and Sister Rehane. Just as the ritual of this program goes, I would like you both to introduce yourself very much briefly. And let's start with Sister Rehane.
Assalamu alaikum to our dear guests. I'm Rehane. I'm 23. My background in English has been in English translation for now. And I'm a mother of one.
Oh my God, that's very nice. And you, Sister Bita?
Yeah, I'm studying medicine and an honor to be here.
Thank you, both of you, for being here. By the way, I wish you luck in your life and in your studies and in whatever you do. The many times in life that we come to think and evaluate whatever we've been doing up until now, we come to ask ourselves, am I living a life of the holy people? Am I a good adherent, a follower of Imam Ali alayhi salam and his set of rules and principles? Am I close to what he expected me to be or to call as his followers? And the answer seems to be so difficult.
It always reminds me of this beautiful quotation, I think, in hadith from Imam Sadiq, if I'm not mistaken, peace be upon him and his family. Do not be the reason of our shame. Make us proud.
Exactly.
And that sentence is everything. Whatever we do, the most little thing that we do from the time that we wake up from our bed to the time that we go to bed is one of the reasons of their happiness or their sadness whenever they see our lives. And if you put it that way, then it's clear for you what to do and what not to do.
Exactly, yeah. So we must take into consideration whatever verses we have in the Holy Book of Quran that have asked us to live a virtuous life, and also all the narrations that we have in the Islamic heritage of our own religion. So, you, Sister Rehane, just tell me, what would be your reaction to such questions?
I think the answer is very obvious that I don't think that the way that we live right now, currently, especially now at the end of time, is anywhere near the standard that it should be to please Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
And the reasons are?
Well, many reasons. The way that we live our lives in society, in politics, in regards to our family, even if we try to live our lives according to the narrations, I think the way that society is right now makes it very difficult for us. Everyone just lives life the way they want.
You mean selfishly?
Exactly. Like we live the way that is easy for us. And right now, I don't think society has made it easy for us to be good followers of Imam Ali.
Yeah, I'm afraid to say yes, that's very true. Well, society and the things that are going on in the whole world, generally speaking, just if you look back and see the histories and then look forward and see what's going on, we would see much more of brutality, much more of harshness toward all human beings. And as human beings, since we're asked to be kind toward each other,
We do not see that kindness, honestly speaking. It's all much of ruthlessness and a selfishness and being so harsh toward each other. It's mostly like this. These are the things that we see mostly in society. But that should not actually make it like this, that, okay, now that society is like this and everything is going bad, wrong, on a very wrong track or off the key, there's no way for me to improve myself.
Sisters, I don't want to sound like kind of idealistic, but the thing is, you're looking at the consequence of the society. I mean, the society we're living in is a combination of so many people. And I believe that the standard that our infallibles, peace be upon them, consider is not the consequence, is the amount of the trying that you are committing in a way of your life. How many times you try, it doesn't matter that you failed at the end of the story. The time that you try to be better, the time that you insisted in front of the bad desires that you have that deviated you from your path is the point.
So now there comes this question that, and now we said that, okay, we ask ourselves if we are close to what Imam Ali alayhi salam wanted us to be. So the question is, how are the people, according to Imam Ali alayhi salam's principles, according to him, according to his perspective, how is a good follower of him and his company? But to answer that, we go for a short break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Yeah, we're talking about how to be a good follower of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And am I one of those followers? How am I going to evaluate myself and make believe that, okay, I am one of those people. And if he was right there, he would have accepted the way I'm living my life, the way I'm interacting with other people, my social responsibilities, my personal responsibilities. I'm doing all of them in the best way possible. So we got to this question that, how are these followers and what are the criteria, the characteristics of these people?
I suppose what Sister Bita said stands correct. We must always strive to be the best that we can be, obviously. And I guess that's the best that we can expect of ourselves. Right now, I think the thing that we should focus mostly on is family, because that's something that affects the whole society. If we concentrate on the values that Imam Ali, peace be upon him, and his family have taught us by their actions, we can create a better society by just implementing those virtues in our lives. And I guess the most that we can expect of ourselves is to try our best.
Yeah, to try our best. And according to Imam Ali, how is explained a person who is a good follower of him?
First of all, I'm going to mention this point that I'm not a follower. You know, I'm not qualified to call myself a follower. I'm a lover. Okay, and I have this love of Imam Ali, peace be upon him and his family, and I try to be a follower. It's a long way for me to be a follower, a real follower of Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
For all of us, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And the second point is that I think the first thing is knowledge. We are living in a modern world that we have to defeat our enemies. We have to teach them the principles of the truth of this world and Allah Almighty. And in order to do that, we need technology. We need to be developed. We need to be scientific. And this is the first point. In order to actually make a better society, we have to educate them. So education is the key. And another point of the society material, in order to be a better follower of Imam Ali, peace be upon him and his family, is justice. You know, we have to be just in every level of society that we are. And I believe these are the two principles, and other things comes from these two.
These sub-branches,
sources.
You mean. There are these
exactly.
sub-branches to these major points. And according to me, I guess, the real followers of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, and especially Imam Ali alayhi salam, because he is considered to be the father,
He is the one who set the principles for us, and he's the one who has taught us how to live and how to be a better person. According to him, a real follower would never lie. According to him, a real follower would never put other people into trouble or problems. And there are a lot more to these definitions. You know, when we say there is no lie, that means you're an honest person. That means you are so sincere with other people. That means when you are interacting with other people, when you're selling things to them, when you are being their doctors, when you are being whatever interaction you would have with people, you're not going to deceive them. Yeah. You're not going to play tricks on people. You're going to be a help to everyone, and you would never be a center of inflicting miseries to other people. Just to get more of information about what we were talking about, I guess, it's the right time for us to go for another break, after which we're going to pursue our discussion.